So, assuming that you can hear us, welcome to the translation of the panel Gesellschaftliche Teilhabe in der Krise von digitalen Brücken und Brüchen, or in English, Societal Access, Participation in the Crisis of Digital Bridges and Breaks. Translating today for you are Dimir, She's a Pirate, and B. So, hello and welcome to the next talk. It's going to be a very nice panel on the topic digital participation, or societal participation. And we pretty much have 1 hour for this, and probably about 30 to 45 minutes in, there will be opportunity for your participation. So please start thinking of questions now. Listen to this. Listen to the experts. And what am I to say? I will just hand over to Thilo and wish you good luck and a lot of fun. Thanks for all the nice words. We want to thank all of you already and thank the experts. We will, of course, repeat that. Thanks. And we are happy to be here this year at the Privacy Week. We, that's Peter Ficker, Philipp Krupp, Theresa Mallet, and me. And I'm from the University of Vienna in cooperation with the Technological University Vienna. And there's also other people from our team. And why are we here? Why did we have this idea to have this panel? At the end of 2019, we started a project. And as part of the humanistic initiative, we started this project, and it's called Digital Infrastructure of Participation, and we are looking at certain alternative groups. So there's the Augustine, a local street paper you all know, the Chaos Computer Club of Vienna. And we want to look at options to participate. What are the possibilities? What can be done? So yeah, that was end of 2019, and then COVID started, as we all know, March of this year. Yeah, just about that time. We, and of course our groups, and basically everyone were confronted with the question, well, how can we participate in the crisis? So, as all of you know, the old options to participate publicly broke away. So, old problems got more intense, new problems came up. And yeah, we took that as an opportunity to look at this right now as the measurements against Corona are established anew, but everyone is hoping for new technology, of course, but that leads to new problems as well. And now that caused us to want to talk to experts from a lot of different areas of expertise. And there's no nicer format than a panel like this. So who are we? I want to especially thank Angelika Adensema, first of all. She's a prime candidate of the party Links, means left. Her party had to concede to another party, unfortunately. And she's talking about surveillance a lot, especially the topic of predictive policing. And that is a sad topic. We have Max Fuchsjäger, who is really engaged in Fridays for Future. And I don't think I have to say much about this, maybe just one sentence. How all of you know, Fridays for Future tries to engage with topics against climate change and tries to rescue the Paris Convention, the goals of the Paris Convention. And he is in an action group of Fridays for Future. And yeah, finally, Teresa Mahlitz, she has been with us basically from the beginning. She worked with the street or homeless paper from the beginning. And yeah, thank you again for finding the time, especially at this rainy day. Maybe it's not too bad to be inside. And before I hand over to Peter, I just want to note, we will try to maybe talk 30 to 40 minutes within our group with the guests. And then, and that's important for us, to also include the broader community that, of course, is here as well. And yeah, also the community here in Vienna. So I'll hand over to the moderator, Peter. Yeah, thank you, Thilo. Thanks from me, of course, as well. And welcome to everyone, and thanks for being here. And thanks that we can hold this panel in this very nice evening. I mean, it's dark and rainy, but still. And how Thilo already mentioned, we really have these questions about digital and also analog problems, but also chances and options, especially also with the media and how is everything seen and the COVID. And also, we are looking across the borders. How is it done on the other side? What can we take out of the crisis and what can we take for the future? Yeah, time is short, so I don't want to talk too much. I hope you will have a lot of participation once we open the panel. Maybe already think of your questions already. Maybe give a sign. And in the second part, directly ask the questions. Yeah. So maybe let's just start. And I want to ask Max, first of all, hello. You are in the IT group of Fridays for Future. And I can imagine that especially in that time where protest in the streets is not possible anymore, and you had to move to the net to make yourself heard, there was a lot to be done, I am sure, especially in the IT. So now the question would be, how did you experience this change that you had to do? What were the challenges that you had to face? I hope I'm heard. Yeah, challenges, I don't know. So we still went into the streets. I think there were, I'm not certain right now, I think there were a few weeks at the beginning when the lockdown started, when we could not go to the streets, and we were not really prepared to have a digital equivalent, but we had a digital action for our fifth walkout, or, well, when we went on protest in the streets. And yeah, we had a small action with hashtags, but because we did not have the know-how, we were used to just go to the streets. But yeah, it's not really a problem. For a long time now, we went in the street again to protest. And because of Corona, I mean, we had to distance ourselves and wear masks. But because people were probably pretty much afraid, a lot less people came and joined us and participated. So that's most of the change for protests. And I think other than that, not much changed. Okay. Maybe as a beginning, a small question also to other people and to a young party, Angelic. With the left party, you are new this year. Did everything work out as you imagined, or was it very a special challenge due to Corona? Yeah, so we definitely faced big challenges, and that was not just we started in Vienna, and it was not just the campaign, but it was also when we first got started with a few hundred people, and that's already how left people who are organized in an political left area, that you just come together and you have votes and everything. And we wanted to have to repeat a big panel in real time and to vote on our program and our list. And in between, there should have been a process where different groups can come together and small working groups can meet. And then there were a few meetings, and then the lockdown came. So that already did not work how we had planned it. We did not have the time to work in and to grow in that time, and that's difficult. I mean, there were, of course, public meetings even in the lockdown phases, and that was online. So a lot of these groups came together online, but people who came to the groups for the first time in an online environment, that was difficult, because it's a different thing if you can't just drop in an analog world. So we had online discussions that people really liked, and we will continue that. We already planned the next round, and then we noticed that it's actually more ordered for discussions than it normally is. It does not expand time-wise, and people don't interrupt each other as much. And the chat is also a big help in parallel. I mean, it can be distracting, but yeah, it worked surprisingly well. Yeah, so that happened in between, and then we had to really vote on our program and our lists. And we decided to do that by mail. Yeah, so we decided to have our list online. Everyone took a list. They took a video, and we had online lists. And it also was quite different than we would have done it in real life, but it was very nice because we had more time. And then we had a classical voting via mail, and that was actually very nice. And yeah, then we had discussion groups and then an online discussion, which worked surprisingly well with tools that also counted the votes automatically. And that is quite nice. And as we found it ourselves, we had a live vote and their counting was a problem. It's not just that simple to count the hand signs quickly and reliably. So online that was more easily because we had a Zoom variant that could count quite quickly and automatically. We also have other panels that have to vote. And yeah, we had good experiences with online discussions and even without tools, with the chat, just a plus and a minus to just see what people are thinking, and that worked quite well. Yeah, and the online meetings that changed things and behaviors because we could have meetings back to back because switching rooms online is a lot easier than doing it in real life. And you can just get someone in for one question in a physical meeting. I would never do that for a short question, but online you can just do that. So yeah, it offered a lot of new options to do things. And that can be nice. So sometimes we just continued that, even though we could have met in person again. Yeah, I think this is getting a bit long. How much time do I have? You can keep talking a bit. And yeah, so that was the preface, the first lockdown pretty much. And then it was opened again. And then we had to collect support messages. And that's a big topic that's not possible to do online. Yeah, to sign digitally is just not easily doable. And that has been demanded for a long time, but it's still not possible. So yeah, officially it's possible to sign digitally, but not for this, not for petitions, and that's just to make petitions more difficult, of course. So yeah, it worked despite Corona, but it still showed that it's quite absurd that even in this position where it's a danger for the official people, where you have to go there to sign something. So yeah, you have to sign your support directly at the official, next to the official. Someone has to sit there and witness it and has to witness and say that you are really you when you're signing. And it's absurd and incredibly difficult and complex to do this, even in this time. And then, yeah, the campaign itself, we actually had quite normally because what can you do? You have to do your campaign in the streets. You can wear masks. Some people said, yeah, it's totally bad. Nobody wants to talk to me if I wear a mask. But of course you have to wear a mask because otherwise nobody can get near you. Yeah, and then we had an argument. It doesn't matter outside, but yeah. I think also other parties did it like that, which is interesting as well. Because usually you post pictures of yourselves, and that did not help work. But some did, some want to do that, others don't want to do that and want to show that because it is a bit critical. And of course, which was pretty cool, in the city of Vienna, there was a screening program for COVID-19. It wasn't advertised as well, but they did have tests for activists, so we could, in the most intense phase, get tested once a week. And that was a lot quicker. It was a relatively quick test, and that was really nice. And one activist was tested positive once, and we had a doctor in the team. And she then declared a quarantine for her and all the people close to her. And that was close to the election. And she was positive, but never had any symptoms. And all other of us were negative. We had some more tests and were all negative. But yeah, it's a very difficult situation. So what do you do? It was me and the other top candidates had to stay at home. And yeah, we couldn't participate in all of the events then. Yeah, very difficult. Then there were some people in quarantine at our campaign party in October. And the question is, if you are in quarantine on election day and don't have an election card, then there are constellations where you couldn't have voted if you didn't take care, didn't get a voting card. And that was a bit of a panic moment for us. But I think all of us managed to do it. Someone sent someone else to get their voting card. Yeah, that was a bit more stressful than it had to be. And with a voting party, so celebration, we had visit, and the doctor in our team bought some quick tests and made a small testing area, which was a lot of work. So it was outside anyway, but we had together an election day, so everyone had to get a test, and those who didn't had to get a test from us, a quick test. And yeah, it was very interesting. And of course, counting the votes took longer. And so it was strange in many ways. So it took till Tuesday. The last votes were on Tuesday, quite long, quite far away from Sunday. And we already knew that there would be less weight to those than with other elections.
Well, so that made for a lot of additional work, I'm sure. Also, Max, Fridays for Future, that would have been the same, right? So, Teresa, I would like to ask you to contribute next, because, of course, our streets are very important for political activism. Augustin, your newspaper was sold at different places, public places. And it would be interesting to know what challenges you faced at Augustin. Yeah, as you said, our Augustin newspaper did a request to the ministry during the lockdown, and we had an official response from the ministry that our vendors are still allowed to sell the newspapers in the streets because that is their occupation. As you know, vendors usually go to very busy public places and they have fixed locations where they stand and sell. So they had difficulties making an income selling newspapers. Some of them were also part of risk groups and were hesitant about selling their newspapers in public places. And some of their licenses also expired. You have to buy a license in order to sell newspapers in the streets at a fixed point where you get kind of an ID card. Then we also have our associations, sites that we needed to close. So we had difficulties connecting the social workers and the homeless newspaper vendors, because many of the vendors don't have a valid address or telephone number, so it's difficult to reach them. So the only thing we could do was post a sign to our doors, and that was very bad for our clients, because our sites are very important as a social place for those people to connect and talk to other people, or just have some company, use a working computer, fill in online applications for help, for example. So it was very bad for those people to lose this kind of place of connection, and anxiety was rising. So, of course, it was our task to support people during that difficult time as social workers. Another challenge was generating funds in order to keep our association running and to also to support our street vendors financially, because most of them are entirely dependent on their income from selling newspapers on the street. And also the sold newspapers contribute to our income as an NGO. So our entire infrastructure was broken, and we needed to ensure that people don't forget that we still exist. And to do so, we made pop-up locations, we made a digital issue that you could buy online. We started corporations, we started building bridges. For example, we collaborated with the pharmacies. Pharmacies were able to sell our newspapers, or also farmers selling fruit and vegetables were able to support us in selling the newspapers, and we also had a crowdfunding campaign. So we were able to provide some kind of security to the Augustin members. And we also made sure that resources were distributed fairly. We went after necessities. So we asked people who needs the most support, and it was up to social workers in the end to distribute and to decide which members got how much money from the funds we raised. A big challenge was remaining visible, and this is where we used classic social media, such as Facebook or Twitter, in order to keep our presence that we normally have in the streets. Facebook was able to replace our digital licenses for selling newspapers at a fixed location. So people were able to sell the newspapers via Facebook. We had a list that was refreshed every now and again. And as soon as lockdown was over, we were able to take the streets back for selling newspapers. So we did deal with a lot of changes using social media, and mid-March we had a huge boost in media activity, that's for sure. Well, talking about media and attention, I would like to go back to Max, because as Fridays for Futures, you became aware that there isn't just a climate crisis, but also a different crisis. And it was very important to keep informing about climate topics, about environmental topics, even though we had this different kind of crisis going on. So how did you deal with distributing attention between the two crises going on, especially because you had to make very quick changes and you couldn't have those changes as you would have normally? Yeah, of course, we had a huge discussion going on internally. We had national campaigns, and with the coronavirus, and also talking about what will happen after the coronavirus. We had a lot of discussion personally. My opinion is that we need the streets, but we were still able to do a lot, and we were also able to make a team that dealt with the topic of public funds and how they're going to be distributed. And saving workplaces. And with the Corona deal, we had a camping event where we camped in front of the Chancery and protested in favor of getting an audience, getting a voice. So we also made a lot of signs and transparencies and banners, because we learned from past campaigns that people are most motivated when they can participate. We had a campaign where we decentrally striked. So we didn't strike, but private persons striked. They could register to strike on our website and then do little campaigns at their respective hometowns. And of course, that was very effective. I think we got a lot of media attention, so that was definitely successful. So our campaigns, which I just detailed, were able to help us be heard, but still we're mostly ignored by media. So there's a lot we still have to do and monitor media for our presence. Well, social media can fill the gaps, but not all of the gaps, I think. Yeah, that's a problem. We're always talking about a bubble, a green bubble, which we're caught in. Because not only our public Fridays for Future accounts, but also our private accounts have the problems that we all follow each other. So we stay within a tightly knit bubble, and people who are still undecided about the topics don't reach us in the way that we would like to. That is the adverse effect of social media, such as Facebook and Instagram, because we have a lot of digital walls there. On Twitter, it's easier because you can use trending hashtags. But yeah, those are the difficulties we're facing with social media. So I would like to go on with Angelica. Your campaigns were criticized because you ignored mass media and tended to work more in social media. Do you think that you were able to reach your target audience on social media well? Could social media replace mass media? Well, no, I don't think that can replace them in total. We were able to mobilize pretty well using social media. And I think we had a large range. We had three major social media campaigns. We had banners that we put on the ground about the fire in the refugee camp. And that was very impressive. Because on one hand you have empty apartments, and on the other hand you have people who desperately need living space. So, and we also made transparent how many people were dismissed from their jobs on large banners with photos. We made a so-called monster banner for New Red Vienna. So that is a quite nice imagery.
I think if you're like open for those things, you can see that when you're know of friends who have friends and friends and who are at least partially interested, it's something you can exchange and you share, and which motivates people. But it is not the same thing and can't be compared with like huge mass media. So that's not it. We've also been in some private media sometimes, but like in the ORF, so the federal radio station, in the main, like the evening news, we haven't been there with our party. And that's, I mean, that's a basic problem. Before, so all the small and new parties have this problem before of the elections. All of them are like criticized for not being there, but actually like the big media only invite those people who are, so those parties who actually are already in parliament, except for the Green Party, they were also invited after they were thrown out of the parliament. If that's good or bad is maybe questionable. So there were only three parties which were not invited. So it's not like a huge amount of parties which would have been added to the discussion. So it were just three new parties and all of them were not invited. So how can you do it in this situation? I think you just have to, yeah, you just have to do more actions. You have to talk to people between elections. You have to try it on the street with the just practical projects which make an impact in the life of people. And sometime, well, you will just have to make it without big media, I suppose, or I fear. We also had yeah, there have been like private companies and media where we were invited. And they, for example, one of them made a like animal rights with all parties. And for all parties, you can see their checks. But for links for our party, they just send it once and they never put it online. So you can't rehear them. So even when we had the possibility to be somewhere, it was still, we even had less impact and we weren't, our stuff wasn't put online after. So it's, we were just not, yeah, I don't know why actually, but it wasn't easy definitely for us. Well, okay. As you can see, the time is already pretty far off. So maybe one last question. I want just to ask all of you, and maybe then for the to open up for the audience, hopefully with a lot of questions from the crowd. And then to just phase over to the second part of the... So currently it looks like COVID is actually getting worse. So there, yeah, everything is, so we have new restrictions again internationally and here, so which again makes it harder for citizens to participate in society and politics. So do you have any like idea, utopia, what should change, maybe no matter whether macro or micro view, so that the voices of everyone are heard in such a situation, and maybe what kind of experiences we collected with digital media in within the lockdown or afterwards. So how can we take those experiences from this first wave into the second, maybe, and even further into the future to learn something? So I would like to first just ask all of you. Maybe Teresa, do you want to start for Augustine? I think what is really for the August, regarding the Augustine, it's very important, especially for socially people who are social hard times. That's the people who are like where you have to start, and digitalization is very important for them as well, and has been even before the corona pandemic. This really hits Augustine very hard and was pretty quickly addressed. So now we have a digitalization project, which is an international idea. So this digitalization project is we published out our issues also digitally, so this has to be financed, this has to be a new campaign for new readers, so that they know, who are the target group for this. And you also have new things the social workers have to do, because now they have to train the vendors in this, which usually sell the people the papers on the street. So this is important to get digitalization here as well, and bring this into the future, not just during the pandemic. Okay, maybe Max. So maybe regarding like for Fridays for Future, is there something you think you will also, you continue using after the crisis, something you tried online and turned out to be great? Yeah, of course. I forgot that to mention that at the beginning. Yeah, the internal changes which came about during the crisis, because of course we couldn't meet anymore, or have been very careful so that we don't become a cluster ourselves. So we are not until now, so which is good. So we communicated for like since 2019, before the summer. We use Slack internally, which is our communication channel, so our communication app main, and that stayed the same. It made a lot of things easier, actually. And additionally, we also used Zoom for the work meetings, because all the working groups had like weekly or bi-weekly meetings. And that made it like more ordered. We had less people talking over each other and stuff like, but otherwise we also had fewer people actively engaged during that. So that's a disadvantage. Currently people want to meet more physically. So actually we want that, of course. And it just creates more the feeling of unity and group. But what stays is that we will still have online meetings, because it's easier especially for those who are not in Vienna, but bigger meetings we still would like to do physically. And also the internal votings, we did those during the crisis on Slack with emojis, which worked quite well. But when we meet physically, we have hand raisings, which is harder to count actually. So we make it a bit of like gamification. So we run through the room and like just pat people on the head who raise their hand. So that can be done quite quickly because we're like 75 people around. And we'll also forgot this, that we had like a general meeting like where usually with this physically where all people from all the different countries of Austria meet, and this time we did it in a Big Blue Button instance. I think it was Zoom, it wasn't Big Blue Button. But something didn't work. We tried to do it in Big Blue Button, but something didn't work out. So yeah, and this worked out as well. So, and the next federal meeting will also be digitally, because it's in a month approximately, and we're still, as the situation is getting worse, we don't want to like become a cluster. That would be not that good, and maybe also not for reputation and getting media involved in that, right? Angelika, okay. So maybe for you also a short comment on that. What was for you? What were you going to take with you? Well, of course, the working groups online, which we did, which weren't totally necessary, but sometimes it's just easier to and more flexible. You can make shorter questions. Meetings for half an hour, but you don't want to go. Yeah, you don't want to meet on the other side of the city if it's just for half an hour. So this is good. It can be at the evening, and it's easier. And I still can cook at home when having an online meeting. So that really made things easier. And this is something that people actually like in the crisis. They tried it out, before the crisis. They never did online stuff. I personally am not afraid of like online meetings. And that, so I, at the beginning, I was really happy that others also started doing this, and they just have to do it and have to try it out. And then maybe thought like, oh, hey, that's cool. Of course, still, there's always a discussion with speakers and headphones. But still, a bit everyone has done it now, and also those who usually don't do it. And I think this is good. And I think it's very interesting to have like international meetings, which are now much more easy to have. And sometimes I ask, so why was there so much aversion against those online meetings earlier? Because why, if you don't have to travel through whole of Europe, and now you can just join a meeting with different people from different parts of the world, why didn't people do that before? So this is something we would definitely like to keep on doing, also for accessibility for disabled people. So we have to discuss how we make a balance between like physical and online meetings, and what should be done where, because it's not one. So both have advantages, and both are not possible for some, and for others they are. Okay, all right. I think that's a good like roundup. And if there are any questions from the audience, I'd really love to ask Jürgen. So Jürgen, are there any questions from the audience? So now we're waiting for the moderator. Oh yeah, hi. Back again. Yes, we have a question from the audience. So who were the losers and winners regarding this? So which parts of society were winners and losers in this going online? So do you have like maybe some answers? Well, I think the losers definitely were those who have totally no digital access, and those people exist, so we can't like ignore it. So especially elderly people, we had some older people who really like, so they were very open, they really tried, but still every time when something new came and they had to try something new, they were really like and they tried again. And so, but we could just see that it was very hard for them, and it didn't work for everyone. So, and also those who just don't have the devices, so they don't have working laptops, and those people exist, and they can't work on the laptops, or if you just can't afford it, so you don't have those devices, and if your speakers don't work, and if your headphones don't work, so these are things like, you have a technological minimum people have to have, and if they don't have it, it's really difficult, and so, yeah, and some people just never worked with computers on their work while they were working. So that's really hard for those people. And I really think it was like the winners were, because we shortly talked about those. It's a different dynamics. It's not just being louder, and but it's because those meetings were a bit more ordered. I think for those who like to use that and could use it, I think actually a bit like those people who usually are maybe more shy or don't say that much, maybe more technical people who usually are a bit more silent in meetings, maybe they had an advantage, but that's just a feeling I have. I don't know if it's really like a huge difference, but just emotionally, some people don't have a problem with working on their computers for the whole day, and others are like really have a problem when they sit at home the whole day. And you see, especially in politics, there are people who just love talking to people and they love discussing, so they really have a problem if they have to sit at home all day and just talking to their computers. I think especially Teresa, for you with Augustine, you have three working computers in your locality, so I suppose that's a problem. Oh yeah, clearly. Sorry. So yeah, especially I wanted to add here. So for the equipment, yeah, of course we have three working computers. So and the social workers, they have four of them have one working computer together. And you also realized that those meetings around the computer were like the window to digitalization and the only window we had. And as I said, there are a lot of like online formulas and stuff you have to do with official sites and the city and stuff like that. So those people who were socially disadvantaged already, they were just hit much more and disproportionately more than before. But otherwise, I would just repeat what Angelica said. So those who have it easier anyway, they got it easier and they were the winners. Do you see other people as advantage or disadvantage in this situation? Yeah. Well, the one thing what I think for last year, we had few people who actually had laptops, and those people usually used their smartphones during the work meetings, and so that was why Zoom was an advantage, because it has an app. And the other group, we also had very few people, but people who are very like data protection and privacy, and especially about their own data. And so tech-savvy people and data-savvy people, and they, of course, didn't want to join on Zoom, which was difficult. And so for bigger meetings where everyone should be there, we had to have someone who made a protocol, a live protocol on Slack in a certain thread, so those people could read on what was discussed on Zoom. And also during the crisis, we really tried to find an alternative to Zoom, but we didn't find anything like a big blue button or Jitsi, which are in the browser, which just doesn't work for many people. And because people have to configure stuff and then it doesn't work. And on the smartphone, it works even worse because you also have to view it through the browser. And so a client app is actually something that's really important to make these things work better. Okay, yeah, just here. We can also see it here at the Privacy Week. We also tried to make participation as easy as possible for many, many people. And so for this year, we also wanted it to make it free of cost for anyone, which of course we did now. But also the like a physical event would have been for free this year, because we didn't want that people are excluded just because of money. But still, also here now, while we are trying to make it most like very accessible, still there is a technical hurdle people have to take, even if it's not very high. So I need a browser and internet connection, and but still I use this, and I have to use this, and I have to have hardware for it and some understanding of it. Okay. Well, dear guys, thanks a lot for a very, very interesting group discussion. So if there are any questions, if you want to keep on discussing with this group, just go to the break room, privacyweek.it/Rosengespräche. You see the URL here. You can also see it on the stream. Again, just a small hint. Clearly, all those speakers speak English. So if you want to join this discussion, you can clearly do this. Go there, ask your question in English. There will be no translations there, but people will answer your questions. Otherwise, you can also ask questions via the forum or on Twitter and Mastodon using the hashtags PW20 or PW20Online. Thanks a lot. Have a nice discussion, and also big thanks. Okay, all the speakers say thank you, and also so your translators say thank you. Okay, well, then that's this. Okay, also have a nice evening. Now the Jinx will follow up with the next moderation, so see you in a moment. And also your translators want to say thanks. So this talk was translated by Dimi. She's a pirate, and B,